Al Jazeera Podcasts.
All eyes are on the International Criminal Court. It's investigating Israel's actions in Gaza and the West Bank. And Israeli officials fear it's preparing to issue arrest warrants against the Prime Minister and other senior figures. So what would legal action mean for the country and its leaders? I'm Nick Clark, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyse and help define major global stories. So then, plenty to take on. Let's bring in our panel of guests from Tel Aviv. Gideon Levy is a columnist with Haaretz newspaper. In Canterbury, in the United Kingdom, Geoffrey Nice is a barrister and a human rights lawyer. And in Gothenburg, Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. Gents, a very warm welcome to all of you. The ICC, by its own definition, investigates where warranted and tries individuals charged with the gravest crimes of concern to the international community. You know the workings of the ICC very well, Geoffrey Nice. We might well expect then that the ICC would be looking into potential crimes from both Israel and Hamas, given everything that has gone on since October the 7th.
Absolutely. It should look at it. I'm glad it has. It's heartening to know from what Mr. Khan has said that although the crimes of October the 7th were committed on the soil of the state of Israel, he's satisfied he's got jurisdiction there. And it's well known that he has jurisdiction for any crimes committed on Gaza, or indeed on the West Bank, because of the acceptance of jurisdiction by the court following a statement by the Palestinian Authority in 1995. So from the very beginning, both sides of this conflict could have been, and I'm glad to say, are being investigated by, as your piece says, the only established international court.
You mentioned there, Geoffrey, Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. One more thing, Geoffrey, the fact that Israel is not a signatory to the ICC, what difference does that make? How does that affect things?
Well, it doesn't in these circumstances, because if Mr. Khan is satisfied not only that he has jurisdiction over crimes committed on Gaza territory, and he's satisfied that crimes committed on territory of Israel, possibly because they were initiated undoubtedly in the territory of Gaza, then it makes no difference that Israel is not a member of the International Criminal Court. It can't avoid the exercise of jurisdiction by Mr. Khan and his team of prosecutors, and we'll have to wait and see what the outcome of those investigations are.
All right, so what's the picture in Tel Aviv? Let's speak to Gideon Levy. He's there now and knows that sense the pulse of what's happening. The fact that Benjamin Netanyahu has come out and spoken about this, Gideon, what does that say and what does it demonstrate? Is he worried?
Netanyahu is worried, and I must be frank with you, there are moments in which I'm hopeful. Netanyahu is very worried, and not only Netanyahu. This was the moment that all the Israeli elite, which is involved in the occupation, in the war in Gaza, was afraid of. Because finally, everyone cares about himself before anything else, unfortunately so. And it might make their lives quite complicated when they will not be able to travel. And even the fact that you are wanted makes the whole game a new game. It's not anymore the condemnations of the EU or the resolutions of the UN General Assembly. Now it's about declaring Israel as a place where international law crimes are being committed and criminals are being wanted. This is going to change the whole game.
When you say there are members of the administration, not only Benjamin Netanyahu, who are you talking about? And tell us, let's explore more why they would be so afraid, as you put it.
Look, it accompanies us for many years now. There were even moments in which, a few cases in which a minister didn't get off the airplane in London and other general cancelled his visit somewhere in Europe because there were some kind of rumours. Because it might happen in a surprise way. You are not necessarily expecting it when you land in a European country and all of a sudden you find yourself in jail. I don't see it happening so quickly, but even this atmosphere of feeling guilty and wanted is very productive. I want to say, Nick, one more sentence. Mm-hmm. It's very clear, to me at least, that in the war of Gaza, many crimes were committed. It's very clear, to me at least, that nobody in Israel is going to investigate those crimes and for sure not to bring to justice those who are responsible and accountable on those crimes. This leaves the situation in an impossible way in which nobody will be taken accountable unless some kind of international institutions will get into the picture. And therefore, I said before, quite in a embarrassed way, that I am also hopeful because I think that those who are accountable for those crimes should be brought to justice.
Okay, Stephen Zunis, let's get the perspective from the United States. I mean, some would say across the world that the ICC indictments would give, if they come, would give another blow to Israel's already battered moral standing. But that, of course, depends on perception, and it's a completely different viewpoint, for example, within the US administration, isn't it?
Very much so. And the United States has been pretty hostile towards the International Criminal Court from the very beginning. Not only is the United States one of the few Western countries that are not members of the court, but U.S. law forbids the United States from cooperating with the court in any way. In fact, it goes as far as saying that the president is authorized to use whatever means necessary, which implies military force, if the United States or anybody, any American or any member of an allied country is held by or on behalf of the ICC. Thus, it was nicknamed the Hague Invasion Act. Got a very negative response from the Dutch, as you might imagine. But what we're going to see from the United States, if indeed there is an indictment against Netanyahu, is that it will immediately be attacked as biased, as hypocritical, as a double standard, which is ironic because, you know, there have been a number of foreign heads of state that have been indicted, and they've been almost all Black Africans. And the other only exception actually is Vladimir Putin. If Netanyahu was indicted, he would be the first pro-Western leader to ever get an indictment. And yet, you better believe that the United States will insist that the court is somehow biased, just as they've said when the International Court of Justice or other international bodies have called out Israel for violations of international law.
Jeffrey, Gideon mentioned the fact that he didn't think it would happen anytime soon. How long could this process take? I mean, how soon could it happen is what I mean.
It's hard to know. I imagine that the ICC's prosecutor has been investigating this with some energy from as soon as it became possible that Israel's response to the terrible attack of the October the 7th was excessive. And so that gives him about 4 or 5 months, I suppose, to have been doing the work that he clearly has been doing. And there's no reason to believe that his arrest warrant, if one is issued, it's only rumor at the moment, will be other than on satisfactory grounds. The fighting's got to stop at some stage. And at that stage, providing there is no pressure applied to the ICC to withdraw the arrest warrant, then either a change of government in Israel may surrender people such as Netanyahu for trial at the International Criminal Court, which is what happened in the case of Slobodan Milosevic, who was a non-African head of state who was tried, or maybe in later time he'll find himself in a foreign country where he thinks he's safe and he's handed over. Same applies to all and any other senior members of his political cabinet or military chain of command who may be the subject of arrest warrants. So it could happen comparatively quickly, or it could be in limbo for a very long time indeed.
Just to clarify that, Jeffrey, sorry to jump in there, but just to clarify that, so it could happen relatively quickly, but within the confines of the war itself, while the war is still going on?
Well, I would have thought that was impossible, wasn't it? Because Mr. Netanyahu, as long as he's prime minister, is not going to make himself available to be arrested by anyone anywhere.
Gideon Levy, the perception within Israel will differ wildly, given the polarized view of the prime minister there. Just give us some idea of how it would be, because after all, this would put Benjamin Netanyahu in the same category as foreign leaders like Omar al-Bashir, the deposed president of Sudan, and indeed the Russian president, Vladimir Putin.
First of all, I would like to claim here that focusing only on Netanyahu, with all my lack of respect to Netanyahu, putting all the focus on Netanyahu is really unfair. Because what we see now is an outcome of years of a very clear policy of apartheid and occupation. Netanyahu didn't start it. Netanyahu didn't invent it, including the incursions into Gaza. And to put everything on Netanyahu is very comfortable. And then to claim that after we will get rid from Netanyahu, Israel will turn into the paradise that we always dreamt that it will be, is really a little bit oversimplified. It's not about Netanyahu, including not this war, because this war is accepted by the majority of Israeli public opinion. This war was approved by the entire government, and most of the members of the parliament are supporting this war and supporting continuing this war. It's not like one dictator here took his whole state into a war and now he is responsible. There are many more others who should take share in responsibility and accountability. Among them, obviously, ministers and also the heads of the army. You can't think that they are not involved in those crimes. Now, Israel will, as usual, put its protection wall and claim that the ICC is anti-Semitic, like the entire world is anti-Semitic. Israel will claim that those are double standards. Israel will claim that the whole world hates us, and no one, almost no one in Israel, will ask, just a moment, how did we get to it? Is it really only the world's fault? Is there no fault done by Israel? Are we really so innocent? Did we really conduct this war in Gaza according to the international law? Those questions will not be asked here.
Let's take it on to the, back to Vladimir Putin and Russia, if we could, Stephen Zunis, because you do wonder what difference this would make, given what happened to him. The ICC's pre-trial chamber issued a warrant for the arrest of Vladimir Putin on March the 17th, 2023. Yet it's made absolutely no difference. He's carried on his war in Ukraine with impunity. So what difference is it likely to make in this case?
Israel is much more dependent on outside trade and military aid and the like than Russia is. I mean, Russia obviously is a huge country, both in size and population. And Israel, despite its military might and technological sophistication, is still quite small and indeed quite quite dependent. And it would make it very difficult for Netanyahu and other Israelis who are indicted from traveling abroad. The United States might be just about the only country where they could travel to safely. And also, I think it could increase the possibility that there can be some sanctions or some limitations, other pressure from Western countries. Again, the United States, unfortunately, would probably resist this kind of thing, but it would empower, I think, human rights activists and their supporters, including trade unions and popular movements, for the international community to put greater pressure on Israel. And so while I don't think Netanyahu is any more likely to actually see justice, actually go to prison than Putin, I think the political impact could indeed be quite more significant.
But the Israeli government has shown itself to be a master of ignoring international sanctions, Stephen.
Yeah, very much so. But the trouble is the sanctions have not been that strong. The United States obviously has blocked the United Nations from taking any action. And while some European countries have been reluctant to provide certain kinds of military technologies The trade is continued, and Israel is seen very much as a part of Europe in certain ways. And with an indictment like this, I think it would be far more controversial, at least. And I think certainly there's some sanctions could be there that the Israelis could actually feel for the first time. Now, again, whether this will actually alter policy, as long as it had this lifeline from the United States, that is another question. But certainly they will feel it. There will be some impact.
And Gideon, Benjamin Netanyahu came out and said that this would not affect Israel's actions moving forward. But do you think it might have implications on the way that Israel behaves immediately in the war on Gaza?
No, not for the short run, because Netanyahu's main purpose is now to achieve this unachievable goal of smashing Hamas, and his other goal is to remain in power, no matter what the ICC is deciding. And for this, he has to continue. And I'm afraid he will continue. He knows also that even if he stops now the war, the ICC is in it. I mean, the crimes were committed and someone will have to be taken accountable for those crimes. I mean, we faced enough catastrophes in Gaza in the last 7 months. Stopping them now is too little and too late. But I don't think that this will stop Israel and Netanyahu to get into Rafah, unfortunately so.
You think that will still proceed now?
I'm afraid so, unless the Americans will be very clear about it, which they don't seem to be.
Jeffrey, there is a suggestion that this ICC investigation will be attached or has been attached to the current ICC investigations underway into potential crimes which date back to 2014, to 13th of June 2014. Tell us about that, if you would, and just how that would work, just attaching the two together.
Attaching them is possible, I suppose, if a continuing intention on the part of Israel that could be said to be criminal is established. But there's another really important part about Operation Protective Edge of 2014 and what happened subsequent to it. In 2014, Ismail Haniyeh certainly accepted that it would be a good thing if the ICC went in, and the following year, the ICC got jurisdiction. That's 2015. So we have to look at the 8 years over which it might be argued that the ICC had dragged its feet concerning the unhappy and tragic events of 2014, much smaller than they may have been in the present crisis consequences. And you have to ask, well, supposing in fact the ICC had shown itself to be busy in those 8 years, 9 years, and shown itself to be willing to take on the Israeli leadership and not to be intimidated by the United States, which may well, over those years, have been deterring it from taking action, you might ask if the present thing could have happened at all, the present conflict would have happened at all, because leaders on both sides, Hamas and Israel, would have known that there was a legal system in waiting and ready to deal with them, even if it hadn't actually finally got round to issuing arrest warrants about events since October. So Protective Edge and everything that happened since then in the legal setting may indeed be something that provides a continuity of intention on the part of Israel. Remember that Protective Edge was described by some as part of an Israeli State of Israel, a policy of mowing the grass, which was a way of perhaps keeping Gaza under control. If there's a continuing intention shown between the two, then it's entirely possible that the prosecutor will be looking at the crimes as connected, much graver though the present ones may be than those that happened in 2014, extremely serious indeed, though they were 500 children killed, I think.
All right, thanks for that, Jeffrey. Stephen, so we have these ICC investigations going on. Then, of course, there is South Africa's genocide case at the International Court of Justice. How do these two separate investigations square up? And I guess they can run concurrently, right?
Well, very much so. I mean, one looks at the specifics of the ongoing war, whether that does constitute a violation of the international genocide treaty, and whether Israel indeed is guilty of such violations. There's a simultaneous a case, actually, about around the legality of the 57-year Israeli occupation of the West Bank and other territories seized in the June 1967 war. The International Court of Justice, which has been around for many, many decades, is about countries, about individual countries and their violations of international law. They are brought forward, by the other member nations of the World Court. The International Criminal Court, which is founded only recently in 1999, looks at crimes of individuals. So it's more on the level. The International Court of Justice looks at Israel on a state level and their violations, whereas the ICC looks at on the individual level of the individual leaders who are responsible for specific war crimes.
Gideon, how do you think this latest approbation is likely to affect the worldview? We touched on the United States earlier, where student protests, as elsewhere in the world indeed, are widespread. There's growing condemnation all over the globe of the way Israel is acting. This just adds to that, does it? It makes the whole concept of what Israel's doing in Gaza to many toxic.
No doubt that the last 7 months were crucial in the way that they changed the attitude of the world toward Israel, and this time also the Western world, and this time also the United States, and this time even some of the Jewish communities in the world. Israel is in big troubles. We have to face it. We have to admit it. Israel deserves it, in my view, but that's another question. But it's all connected. It's not a coincidence. This war in Gaza, which was much worse than all the wars that Israel had launched before, with so many more civilians being killed, children, women, starvation, destruction, you name it, and all of you know exactly what I mean. This war is a game changer. And after this war, Israel cannot be perceived anymore as it was before. The thing is that the Israelis are not exposed to the images of Gaza because no one is showing it to them. But the world sees Gaza. And anyone who sees Gaza cannot remain indifferent, cannot say, oh, but in Syria they killed more. Anyone who sees Gaza has very, very hard questions to ask and big, big suspicions about those who are accountable for this. And therefore, it's not a coincidence. Each of those powers are trying now to bring people who are responsible for the reality in Gaza to be taken accountable. And that's exactly the role of the international community.
Gentlemen, our time is done. We appreciate your contributions. Thank you very much. Thanks to all our guests, Gideon Levy, Jeffrey Nyssen, Stephen Zunas. Thanks very much. This episode was produced by Gloria Wangia-Lassell, Imogen Kimber, and Maria Karantrishvili, Paul Taylor, and Mohammed Sobi. The program was edited by Zainab Adda and Joe DeFries. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thanks for listening. Tune in on Tuesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, Myanmar's civil war appears to have entered a new phase. That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.